Midnight Radio Network. The crowd goes wild. Eric and Gary and Harley and McNamara together again for, well, for 1 week. Aren't you on vacation next week?
I'm on vacation starting Friday. So.
Yeah, well, here we are. It is that time of the year. Then I've got another vacation in September, so...
Then I have one in October.
And then November.
Wait a minute, why am I taking off in October again? What an idiot.
Yeah, why are you taking off in October?
I mean, I remember I did it in 2008. Remember when the election...
Oh, that's right. You did do that.
I regretted it the whole time, and now I got another one scheduled. But,
yeah, well, that's just the way it goes. Yeah, you get a couple of old guys who have worked their way up to 500 weeks a year on vacation.
We will talk a little bit later on about your vacation with Colorado hippies.
Oh, I think my brother got tired of me saying the word hippie. Welcome to Ask the Law for Monday, August 2nd, 2010. It's all a service of Old Blue USA. We want to thank R.J. Taylor and retired senior trooper Monty Dial, the Texas Highway Patrol, who joins us right now. We want to remind you that all the information, the answers to questions are up to date as of today, Monday, August 2nd, and can change without notice. And if you want your questions answered anytime, you can submit your questions at go to askthelaw.com, askthelaw.org, askthelaw.org, and click on the big red button that says email. Ask the Law. Comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial during this program are considered to be opinions only. So, Trooper Dial, welcome to August. How are you?
I am doing great.
First of all, I want to talk about the big Great American Trucking Show coming up at the end of this month in August. This is like the last kind of hoorah as far as trade shows are concerned. And you will be there?
Yes.
Is that correct?
RJ will be there. Mm-hmm. He's not bringing the truck.
Okay.
But we will be there along with some CVE troopers from Texas Highway Patrol with one of their Tahoes.
Yeah. This is going to be I think one of these years where you guys are just going to be completely surrounded with the rollout of CSA 2010 and everything else. This year, I think we will have you guys probably have a lot more questions you had last year. Because I think last year we still had the majority of this industry that just wasn't paying attention to CSA 2010. But I think that will change. By the way, I want to remind you, drivers, if you have a question about hours of service, CSA 2010, or CSA 2010, give us a call at 800-288-9227.
And I did see a couple of postings. I think one started it on our Facebook page that simply said, I hate CSA 2010.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, there was nothing else. It was just, I hate CSA 2010.
Well, it's just been, I think it's just so confusing for so many people, and that's why we have programs like Ask the Law. 800-288-9227. I think it's what people don't know. And then you have all of the rumors, and this has gone on since the beginning of trucking, where, you know, you got guys and gals out there behind the wheel and alone for so many hours a day. They got so many things to think of. And then they say something to somebody, and then the rumor gets around that this part is true, that part is true. Right now, CSA 2010, what do you think is the biggest rumor surrounding CSA 2010 that's not accurate? What do you think that would be that you're hearing on an anecdotal level?
CSA 2010, the driver's going to lose his CDL.
Okay. And that cannot happen under CSA 2010.
No, it can never happen under CSA 2010.
That's not the point of CSA 2010.
No.
There are ways to lose a CDL. CSA 2010's not one
Correct.
Of them.
Your home state is the only one
that
can take your CDL away from you.
Well,
CSA 2010 is a program that is administered by FMCSA. And it has no bearing on a driver losing his CDL.
Okay. And that is, I think, the biggest... What would you think is that what are people missing from CSA 2010 on the positive side? What do you think that's not sinking in with drivers when it comes to CSA 2010?
The driver that... does a proper inspection.
Mm-hmm.
That driver is fixing to be a premium driver.
Yeah.
He will be able to go to work for any trucking company that he chooses to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Simply because, and I think you and I discussed this last time, you start looking at the scores
mm-hmm.
that are issued for violations that show up on a roadside inspection.
Right.
Those violations carry a greater weight than violations that are found during a level one inspection. And a prime example of that would be a tire violation. A tire violation carries a value of 8. A brake out of adjustment only carries a 4.
What does a brake light carry?
Brake light is a 4
is
or
a 4.
Less.
Okay. Okay.
But here again, the violations that the driver can find when he does his walk around, the pre-trip and the post-trip.
Right.
Those violations carry the greater value scores than, say, the breakout of adjustment.
Right.
You know, because that's something that the driver is not responsible for. Yes, you know, it ultimately the driver is, but they're looking at things that the driver can immediately find when he gets out the morning and the evenings and he does his walk around.
Okay. I want to talk about some of the possible scenarios that could come up. And I want your advice on a couple of things in just a moment. 800-288-9227. It is Ask the Law. Let's go to the phones.
Let's go to Dave on the 40 in Arkansas. Dave, hi. You're on Ask the Law on the Midnight Radio Network with Trooper Dial. Welcome. Hi.
Hi, Trooper Dial. Hey, I just had a question about on some of the infractions that are on this TSA 2010, which I agree with this because it'll make the road safer. For instance, on accidents, it aren't your fault. You're not given a ticket when the accident happened. It was the other person's fault. But yet on TSA 2010, they still seem to give you a point.
No. What they're going to do, Dave, and I'm glad that you brought this up. And this goes back to a letter. I read a letter that Administrator Farrell sent to Bill Graves at ATA. And this is one of the points that they were talking about. And statistics have shown that 75% of the crashes involving truck-tractor semi-trailers are the other party's fault. Well, and so Bill Graves said, you know, why penalize the motor carrier for these what they call a non-preventable crash? And Ann Farrell sent a letter back to Mr. Graves and told him, said, yes, we agree. But what we're going to do is we still want to take and look at every crash that a truck driver is involved with simply because of the fact that we can take and use that to determine whether or not this carrier or this driver is going to have a problem. Now, if it gets to the point that the motor carrier is fixing to be involved with the intervention portion under CSA 2010, they can now step in, get a copy of the police officer's crash report along with the letter, and submit that to FMCSA. They will look at it, and if it was deemed a non-preventable crash, FMCSA will no longer use that crash to determine whether or not the motor carrier should be involved in an intervention.
Okay. So it's just going to be on there until then the CSA 2010 gets a letter to
right
to look at it, and then it'll be taken off of your score for the CSA 2010 once they decide that it was a non-preventable.
Correct.
Okay, that was all my questions. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
So
we
much.
Do appreciate that. That's a really good question. In fact, because that's one of these, I don't know that it's so much a rumor as it is one of those huge question marks that's been hanging over the industry
right.
head. And that is what happens in that scenario, because we do know that the at-fault situation sometimes is kind of sketchy. And certainly if you can determine if the driver believes they were not at fault or if they just simply were not at fault, then something needs to happen to make sure that is not on the record.
Well, and currently, under the current system, the compliance review process, there are six factors that are rated when a compliance review is done. And factor number six is your crash data. And currently, they look at the number of crashes times a million divided by the company's fleet miles. And if you have a crash rate of 1.5 crashes per million miles, more than 1.5, then you get an unsatisfactory rating in factor six, which means the best that you can get as a result of that compliance review is a conditional rating. But they have a current system in place that you go and look at all of your crashes, and if you have one where the driver's tootling down the road and somebody runs into him, the driver's at a traffic light and somebody runs into the back end of him, those are crashes that FMCSA has deemed non-preventable.
Right.
So you get a copy of the police officer's crash report along with the letter, and you submit it to your regional FMCSA location. They will review it. If they agree, then they will in turn redo a compliance review just on factor six. And if they bring you down to 1.5 crashes or less, then you get a satisfactory rating.
Yeah. Okay. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to go to a break. By the way, drivers, we have an open line for you right now, 800-288-9227. You got a question about hours of service. If there's something in hours of service that maybe your carrier has been telling you that you think is wrong, maybe this is a chance to clear that up or at least point you in the right direction. 800-288-9227. Also coming up, a scenario that I've had a question about under CSA 2010 and the Clean Ports Act. Dorothy Cox over at The Trucker, thetrucker.com, has written about this and warned about this, but it's been introduced officially and how this could have an impact on trucking beyond the ports. And OOIDA. I got a call from Jamie Jones, the editor of Landline Magazine, while I was fishing at a lake and last week, and we were talking about this the OOIDA essentially taking aim at this California law regulating handgun ammo delivery. Really interesting story here and much more. 800-288-9227. Drivers, if you have a question for Trooper Dial, this is the time to get in. Please do that right now. 800-288-9227. Back to Ask the Law in just a moment.
On the Midnight Radio Network. It's Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law. Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
It is Ask the Law for Monday, August 2nd, 2010. All the information is up to date. As of today, can change without notice. We're here with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol, courtesy of Old Blue USA. And comments made by anyone other than Trooper Monty Dial are considered to be opinions only. Let's get back to you at 800-288-9227.
Let's go to James in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. James, you're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was wondering, Trooper Dial, has it been determined how many points are getting assigned to each violation? And also, has it been determined the total amount of points a driver can accumulate before any kind of actions are taken against that driver?
Yes, yes to all three. What they have done is FMCSA came up and assigned a value for just about every violation that a driver can be written or a motor carrier can be written up for.
Okay.
And it's like I explained earlier, the violations dealing with doing a proper walk around in the morning, in the afternoons, as well as load securement. That's something the driver has control over.
Right.
Those carry a higher value, a higher score than violations that would be discovered, say, when the trooper or the inspector gets underneath the truck and does a level one inspection.
Okay.
How, as far as the maximum points or at what point you have a score that's high enough, that's going to be based upon which peer group you're in. FMCSA broke it down, and there's three peer groups of the drivers. The first peer group, you have a driver has to have three roadside inspections. That's peer group one.
Okay.
Peer group two are those drivers that have 4 to 6 inspections.
Okay.
Then you have peer group three, which is every inspection above 7 or more.
Okay.
So you're going to fall into one of those peer groups, and you are going to be compared to other drivers that are in that peer group.
James, and if you'll listen on the radio in just a few minutes after the break, James, we'll explain a little bit more and kind of extrapolate that out as to what that means. Your calls are welcome. That opens a line on Ask the Law at 800-288-9227.
Radio Network and Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial. Good morning. Welcome. 800-288-9227. Drivers, if you want to get your question in about CSA 2010 or anything else, hours of service. Gary McNamara, Eric Harley.
And all the answers are up to date as of today. Monday, August 2nd, 2010 can change without notice. Any comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. Let's get back to the phones. 800-288-9227.
Let's get to Jimmy in Idaho. Jimmy, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
Good evening. My question is, I plan on soon getting my authority. I'm going to be doing one truck, and I'm going to be a sole proprietor. And in the event of a serious accident, I want to know the likelihood that I can be sued for personal assets such as my house.
Mm. Wow. Well, that might be a question for an attorney. But
yes.
I would contact an attorney, one that has some experience with incorporating your business and everything else. They'll be able to tell you what you can protect and what you can't with an incorporation, or if an incorporation is necessary. I don't think that's one I'm, you know, just getting one that you.
Like say, are you an attorney, sir?
No, I'm not an attorney.
Are you going to play one on the radio?
No, I'm not.
I'm
not even going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. Well, you have to know that you really have to know that you do need protection if you're going to have your own business.
Yes.
So that is important, but certainly, well, we could do another segment. Ask the lawyer. Yeah, probably not. 800-288-9227.
We're just bringing a member of Congress.
Yeah, because they're all lawyers.
We can cover,
and obey the law to the T, and it always applies to them, too. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's yeah. 800-288-9227. If you want to get in, do that right now.
Let's go to Floyd in Texas. Floyd, you're on the Midnight Radio Network. Welcome. Hi.
Thank you. I was wondering what provisions under CSA 2010 have been made for guys like me. I'm a single truck owner operator, and I run under my own authority. Where in this peer group do I fall?
What you're going to do is, as a motor carrier, they're going to have the trucking companies broken into 5 peer groups, and you would be in peer group 1, which is motor carriers, I believe, less than 25 power units. So when it comes time for interventions to take place, you are going to be compared to all motor carriers that are in peer group 1.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it makes sense. Sounds like this program is a dagger aimed directly at the heart of the owner-operator in the small fleet.
Well, I don't know.
Not necessarily, because here again, you know, you have to take and look at two different scenarios here. One is you've got a driver. The other one is you've got a motor carrier. Yes, the CSA 2010 is going to shut down a trucking company that should not be out there, if they are operating with unsafe practices, CSA 2010 is going to get them off of the road immediately. If you are the owner of that trucking company and you are the driver,
the sole driver,
you know, now you have a vested interest in making sure that everything is done in accordance with CSA 2010. But at the same time, you read and you hear horror stories where trucking companies will have a driver that is involved in a crash, multiple fatalities. What they do is this company will close the door under this name and they'll reinvent themselves and continue to do the same thing that they were doing prior to this crash.
Mm-hmm. That's happened before. We know that's happened before.
That's happened before. So what CSA 2010, the sole intent of it is to get unsafe drivers not off of the road, but make them to where they will be unemployable. Motor carriers, if you have a high enough score ranked against your peer group, then they could eventually come in and shut the door and put you out of business. But that's if you fail to follow what CSA 2010 is really supposed to be.
Does that make sense?
Under the peer group ranking that you were discussing a minute ago, under the crash ratings, an owner-operator that gets lumped into that 1.5 crashes per million miles, that's roughly 10 years of operating. That doesn't seem hardly right.
Well, but that's under the current system now. See, that's under the compliance review system now. Under CSA 2010, what they're going to do is it was going to be based upon the number of power units. Here again, remember, CSA 2010 for motor carriers is going to be broken down into peer groups. So you have a peer group set up. You're going to be in peer group one. You're going to be compared against all other motor carriers that fall into that same peer group. But under the system that FMCSA is going to do is they will look, yes, the crash is going to go on your record as a motor carrier. But FMCSA is allowing a motor carrier such as yourself, if you're involved in one of these 75% of the crashes where it's the other person's fault, FMCSA is going to allow you to submit a letter along with the crash report and says, look, I was operating this vehicle safely, minding my own business, and out of the clear blue, here comes somebody and runs into me. FMCSA is going to say, okay, we understand. That's one of those 75% that we're going to say it's the other person's fault. So we're going to take and take it or use it to where it does not count against your record.
Well, that seems like a lot more paperwork to get involved with than when just a simple copy of the police report should be sufficient to prove that you weren't at fault.
Well, but under the current system now, that crash is going to carry the same weight as it does under CSA 2010. If you want that crash taken and not included in the current system now, you would still have to submit a letter along with the crash report. One of the things that they're wanting to do is, and going back to when I first started doing compliance reviews, each individual auditor that went in could take and determine whether or not the crash was or was not preventable. FMCSA did not like that, so they took that out of the investigator's hands. So what they did was say, okay, everything's going to count, but what we're going to do is we're going to allow the motor carrier to submit a crash report along with the letter and says, hey, look at this. It was a non-preventable crash. They will look at it, and then they will take it and will not use it in the formula to determine your crash rating.
If they believe it's non-preventable.
Correct.
In other words, the burden of proof is going to be on the motor carrier to prove that he wasn't at fault rather than FMCSA to prove that he was.
Correct.
That don't seem right.
Well, but the thing is, see,
warning citations go against your record. That's not right either.
Well, but here again, FMCSA does not deter. FMCSA does not look at whether a violation resulted in a citation being issued, or whether the violation resulted in a warning. FMCSA is looking strictly at warnings. Citations are issued by the state, not by FMCSA. If you've ever gone through a roadside inspection and there were FMCSA inspectors at the scale working, all they can do is write warnings. They cannot issue citations.
No, but if you get a citation from the state, it's going to FMCSA.
It goes as a warning. It does not go as a citation.
Well, then it doesn't make any difference whether you get a warning or a citation.
That is correct.
You're still going to get hung, which is not right.
Yeah. It becomes any notable offense during that inspection.
Yes.
Any notable item is going to be on CSA 2010.
And that's like I said it earlier. Now it becomes important that a driver takes the time and knows how to do a proper inspection.
Yeah, and that's and Boyd, we're up against a break here. We thank you for your call, and certainly we honor your concerns. We know that a lot of drivers have the same concerns, but we're going to try and explain this. This is why Ask the Law is so important, and also askthelaw.org is the website. If you've got a question, if you can't get through here, we do have a full board. If you have a question at any time, go to askthelaw.org and click on that big red button that says email Ask the Law. Back with your questions and more with Trooper Dial in just a moment on Ask the Law.
On the Midnight Radio Network. It's a Midnight Radio Network. Welcome. Good morning. Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial, Gary McNamara with Eric Harley.
It's a service of Old Blue USA. All the answers are up to date as of today, Monday, August 2nd, 2010. Can change without notice. Opinions made or comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial considered to be opinions only. Let's get another question in before the top of the hour.
Let's go to the land of T.O., Cincinnati, Ohio. And Pete, welcome. You're on the Midnight Radio Network and you're on Ask the Law with Trooper Dial. Welcome. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Quick question. Can dispatch put a driver on a live load, live unload appointment that is going to put them over their 14-hour three times in the last 3 weeks? I've either done a live load or live unload where I have arrived at the shipper. The shipper literally at the very end of my 14-hour shift, and then I end up having to do quote-unquote safe haven driving 4, 5, and 6 hours past my 14 to get to a place to park because you can't park there.
What you should be doing in a situation like this, Pete, FMCSA has a website that you can go in and file a complaint through the internet. There's also an 800 number. The complainant, which would be you, remains anonymous, and FMCSA or the state partner in that area is very interested. If it's a deal that results in a compliance review being done, company finds out that you were the one that complained, now we get into the Whistleblower Act, which you can file suit and go back to the company for that.
In fact, if you'll listen after the break here, Pete, we'll give you some more information there, and I want to talk more about that too, about the 14-hour rule, going past that 14-hour rule, and what all of that entails and everything else. So stand by. More on Ask the Law coming up in just a moment. If you want to get through, do it now.
800-288-9227.